19, verses 15 to 35. If your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault, just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. But if they will not listen, take one or two others along, so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. And if they refuse to listen, even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector. Truly, I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you lose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, truly, I tell you, that if two of you on earth agree about anything they ask for, it will be done for them in my Father in heaven. For where two or three gather in my name, there am I with them. The parable of the unmerciful servant. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times. Jesus answered, I tell you not seven times, but 77 times. Therefore the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that had to be sold to repay the debt. At this the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him, cancelled the debt, and let him go. But when the servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants, who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him. Be patient with me. I will pay it back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debts. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything happened. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said. I cancelled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you, unless you forgive your brother or sister from the heart. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Sure, Bella. Thanks be to God. Last night, did you read it? It's quite challenging. So my question tonight is, do we really want to be a church together? It's great to gather together, and it's great to spend some time worshipping together, but the question really is not, do we want to gather together in Asian Max on a Sunday evening? The question is, do we really want to be a church together? You know about church? Of course you know about church. You've been part of church for many, many years. Some of you hundreds of years. I don't mean that really, but you know. And some of you have been around in church for ages and ages. You know about the church, the word for church is ecclesia. Everyone say ecclesia? That's the first Greek word that we've learned tonight. You've probably used already ecclesia. And some of you will know that it comes from ek, which means out, and kaleo, which means to call out. But of course, that's the kind of, if you translated every word according to its breakdown, broken down, that it would be a weird language, and that's not really how it works. So the word for church is really a gathering or an assembly. So when you call people together, like a city council, or call a gathering of the city leaders together, and we'll call people together, that would be an assembly. Or like a synod, the Church of England, we'll call people together to meet in York. could have an assembly, and they would call people out. That'd be the call, the keys you would get together. It would be a public meeting where people would get together, an assembly, gathering. Is this a gathering? Is this an assembly? Is it, do you feel of yourself as a kind of like a group who were called out to do something together, to be something together? It's interesting that we often use the word church, but we think talk about it when you say, do you go to church? You heard that phrase, do you go to church? We often say, or people talk about it in the press, and they say, the church is saying this. And they talk about it as if it's buildings, or they talk about it like it's a hierarchy of institution. But of course we know that it's a people. You know, it's us, isn't it? But it's not just us whenever we are us. Like on my own, us. I mean, I am part of the church. I never leave the church in that sense. But it would be wrong to say I'm an assembly on my own. I'm a gatherer. I know I have lots of voices in my head, but that's not what it's a bit like you saying, would you like to come to my party? You say, yeah, I'm going to the party. I'm part of the party. And you never actually go. Would you be part of the party if you never actually went to the party? No, you couldn't say I was part of the party if you never actually went. Or if you were part of the team, if you supported Chelsea, like me, you're the best people in the world. And then, but if you said that you were part of Chelsea, but in fact you weren't part of Chelsea, I'm not part of Chelsea. I support them, but I'm not part of the team. If I said to you, I belong to Chelsea, you say, well, no, you don't. You're overweight and you're unfit. You don't belong to Chelsea. So we said that about the church. Is it possible to say you are part of the church, but you don't really gather? You're not part of the life of the community. I don't think it is possible to say that really. I think we need to revisit what we think about church. And of course, we know that Jesus was keen on building a new community gathered around him. There was already a community of people gathered around the one true God, Yahweh. Wasn't that they were called? Yeah, the Jews, the Israel, or the people of God, or the children of God, in Jesus' name. Father Abraham was their father, and they gathered around all sorts of things. They gathered around the Torah, and they gathered around the temple. And Jesus places himself in the middle of the people, and he says, I am the new Torah. I am the teaching that you want to listen to. Place your life around me. I am the way, the truth, and all that. And he said, I am the temple. I am the place of sacrifice. I am the place of wholeness and cleansing. Wherever you would go for the temple, you can come to me. So he says, I want to build a new community. And it includes my brothers and my sisters from Israel. Of course it does. But it includes other people. And that's the joy of Jesus. He wants to include those who are lost, isn't he? He wants to include the sheep who are straying. And he wants to include those who weren't even considered sheep in the first place. And he wants to bring them home, isn't he? That's his heart. In fact, there's more joy in heaven than one sheep that goes and there's 14,999 gathering of them. Isn't that the story? So this is Jesus. He wants to gather people together. He wants to build a new community. And this is what happened. Every day they continued to be. A couple of thousand had started gathering together. And this is what they did. They gathered together and they met together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes. When was the last time you broke bread in a small group or in your homes? I know we're Anglicans, but you are allowed to do that. You can tell people, but isn't it great? This is the model of the early church, to break bread in your house, to remember Jesus in the center of your life. And eat together. We're going to do it, I think we're going to come up to a small group this week. We're going to have a barbecue. Apparently there may be some bread in the barbecue. Do we gather with Jesus at the center, or do we just have a barbecue together? They ate bread in their house, and they ate God's guidance and seeing how it's praising God and enjoying the faith of God. But what happens when the relationship, because it didn't take long for that relationship to get tough, what happens when it gets hard? Do you know what it's like when someone says something, or doesn't say something, or looks, or doesn't look? Or they kind of respond to you in a way which makes you feel like they've dissed you, or they've put you down? And you want to distance yourself from them. Or sometimes you even say, speak to them out. You don't. It's a horrible feeling, isn't it, when you're in a relationship with someone and then something happens in that relationship. It could be a word, it could be a small phrase, it could be a look, it could be the smallest thing. You're with me when you think of something recently, maybe in your closest relationship, your husband, your wife, or your children, or it could be in your in your small group, or it could be in the church, even this morning, or even this evening, you walked past someone and they didn't look at you, and you were hoping that they'd just connect with you, and they didn't, you just felt a little bit, oh, what do you do with that feeling? What do you do with that thought? And we often find ourselves, what we do is we distance ourselves from the place of pain. Isn't that what happens? That something happens to us and we distance ourselves from it. We put a wall up around ourselves because it's too painful to deal with those situations. It's a bit awkward, it's difficult. And so we fear it, so we put our hands up and we distance ourselves and put ourselves back. And then Pam reads the story to us, or this bit of the narrative, and I've really loved Matthew 18 this last week. I've thought about it before, but just coming back to it again afresh this week has been really rich for me and very challenging. And what I've loved about it is that there's a flow from the previous week. Anyone here the previous week looked at the earlier bit of Matthew 18? But Jesus starts off with, if your brother sees you, if he knew something about how we are. I kind of wonder whether he was playing that sort of thing when he said, if your brother or sister sins. Let's stop there for a moment. It could take a long time to get through this whole passage. I can see the flash nervousness across your eyes. You've got to work three. If your brother, is that how he's? Do you want to be a church? Because apparently in the church, they're brothers and sisters. We become part of a thing called the family. And that means that there's a strong bond of fellowship and friendship together that's stronger than would be normal in community. You know, I like neighbors, I've met them yet. When I do, I love them, you know. But they're not family, are they? But here we are, we're supposed to be brothers and sisters. Is that how you feel about the people sitting two rows behind you? As opposed to the ones to be left. And we have these name badges at the moment to get to know our brothers and sisters' names. That might help. Interesting, isn't it? How far are we along the line towards being brothers and sisters? So if your brother sins, now the word, which was Andy was really good this morning, and he spoke about the word sin. It does mean, it's interesting the word sin. Should we have a few words for sin? In the story of Matthew 18, he keeps giving up different words for sin. Here's another Greek word you might want to say with me. Scandalizo.
Scandalizo.
Does anyone see an English word in there?
Scandalizo.
It means to stumble. If something causes you to stumble, or something causes you into a scandal of some kind. Yeah, that makes sense. That's where we get the word from. Scandal. Kind of when something is bad, it's a kind of scandal to yourself. You know? And Jesus says, if the world can cause you to stumble, consequently can cause others of us to stumble, us little ones. But also ourselves can cause ourselves to scandal, to stumble, and to cause a scandal. You know, so the internet is a wonderful thing, powerful thing. I love the internet. But it's also an incredibly dangerous thing, isn't it? And it can cause us to stumble. A lot of the time. We know the statistics, but not that they are so horrifically large that the likelihood is that there'll be a sizable proportion of this group here that in pornography is part of their life. And we know that if it's not pornography, it might be other endlessly irrelevant things that they're clicking on all the time, but happen to come up as adverts. When they click on next time, there they are again. It's incredibly easy, isn't it, to fall into this thing, and it causes us to stumble. And Jesus says, if your right hand, which is your pinky hand, causes you to stumble, let's just cut it off. A bit less control of your left hand. But if your eye, which is also in your own page, causes you to stumble, let's cut it out. Why is he saying this? Because it's quite strong. But basically, he wants us to be good, isn't he? Why does he want us to be good? Is it because he doesn't like us? No, it's because he really does like us. He wants us to be the kind of people who would always be the kind of people like him, who looked good and smelled good and felt good everywhere. And kind of like, that was a line from a song that I remember from my childhood that none of you know. It makes sense to me. Yeah. But wouldn't it be good to be the people who really smell good, look good? tasted people. Well, that's what Jesus wants us. And so he says, would you protect yourself? And anything causes you to stumble, get rid of it as soon as you can. So if that means anything to any of you, then do that. And here's another one. I want to say, planeho, I think it's.
Planeho.
Which means to go astray. And what we see is that sometimes a sheep will go astray, or one of us will go astray, be led astray. And that makes sense to me too. Isn't that what it feels like? You're kind of led into something. You don't intend to do it, but you're kind of led astray, and you kind of find something. How did I get here? What were the steps it took me to? What were here? I started over here, but now I'm here. That would be a sad thing if some of us got led astray. Jesus wants to sort that out. And then harmatoneo. I think it's that. Harmatoneo. Yeah, harmatoneo.
Harmatoneo.
You're a great Greek scholarist. And then we know that's one of the archers, and that's the mistamar, which is where we would see that in this translation. But sing sounds so like churchy, isn't it? Whereas we all know what it is to do something that's causing a scandal, you know, to miss the mark or to wander and get lost. So we're talking about real things that normally give you an answer, maybe you're going to look like, you know, people that you live with, your family, they know what these words are. Now, how can it happen when we stumble or get lost somewhere? What should we do? What should we do? So Jesus says this. You should go and point out the fault. Alecho. I don't know how you say that. It's Greek to me.
Alecho.
But it needs to call someone to account. Come call them to account. When was the last time someone did that to you? Do you remember the last time someone called you to account? You know, they could see the beginning of something, a journey that was beginning here. And they could see, because they weren't you, they could see that it was going to end up in a bad place for you. So they put you to a point. They just say, well, I don't know if you noticed, but you seem to be hanging around this other person a bit too much. Awkward conversation, but they noticed it. Well, they could just notice that your language is beginning to slip, or your drinking is beginning to go up. And just kind of make more, and you just get a bit looser at the end of the day. Or that you were just, they could see that anger was emerging out of you, and they could see that you were shouting to your kids just a bit more. I mean, speaking aloud. If you know what I mean. When was the last time anyone pulled you up? Anything? Because they were your brother or your sister. Not pulled you up because they wanted to pull you down. You hear me? But because they wanted to protect you from wandering off and getting lost somewhere where we're too far back before it's too late. Have you met someone who's really got into the worst of the situations? And then I'm going to spend some time with them chatting to them about their mission, or their crisis, or their days. And oh, how they longed for someone before it got too late to help them out when it was still manageable. Think of someone in debt. Yeah, you remember this. Yeah. This is the kind of community that Jesus wants to create, a group of people who call themselves brothers and sisters, who call each other out, not because they don't like each other, but because they really do like each other, and because they know that this is the group they're going to have to live the rest of their lives with. So they call each other out. So the goal is always resolution or restoration rather than retribution. It's never to try and bring shame upon someone, rather to release them from the possibility of shame. Does that make sense? I mean, we don't want to point someone and make a joke of it. Ha ha! No, the opposite. We want to cover their shame like God does in the garden. In the garden, you know, in Adam. The first response of God to Adam and Eve is to cover their shame. They felt shame. And so God gives them a way of covering their shame. It's interesting, isn't it? That's in a way, you could say that's what Jesus does. It covers our shame. Atonement is to cover over something. Maybe he's just the great cover over of our secret shame. And just put down here, we want to win them over at the top of the side. Isn't that a lovely phrase that Jesus used? Win them over. It's as if there's a battle going on. I believe in a battle, a spiritual battle, which is more real than, well, as real as any battle that's going on in the world right now. And there's always more going on behind the scenes than we know. And so as I'm looking at you, I don't know what battles you're facing, but I do know that you're in a battle. And your children are in a battle, and your neighbors are in a battle. And there's an enemy that's roaming around looking for someone to devour. If you happen to be available, then he'll take you out. And he's just really interested in trying to take you down and take you out. And isn't that true? There's a battle, a warfare world going on around us. And so we have to stand up and make sure that we're with each other. Because if we're not with each other, then who else is going to be with us? Well, it's not going to be the others, is it? They're not going to worry about us. No, we need to be a church together. We need to gather around each other and make sure that none of us get lost, stumbled, or cause a scandal to ourselves and to others. So here's the flow of Matthew 18. At that time, the disciples, the apprentices, came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest of the rest of them?" Go ahead, that's a bad question to ask. But Jesus tips Jesus to say, "Well, you need to be the lowliest." And then he says, "If anyone causes one of these little ones, these lowly people, then those who believe in me to stumble, it would be best for them to have a large root stone around there." Jesus takes it really, really seriously that if anyone causes someone to stumble, it's a really bad thing. So don't do that. Note to self, don't cause someone to stumble. And then he says, "If your own hand or foot causes you to stumble, cut it off the foot." That's quite stringent, that's quite strong. So, if a man owns 100 sheep, he then tells the story to the parable number one in Matthew 18. So, if a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 in the hills to look for the other? It's interesting that Jesus suddenly switched kind of narrative style and he's going into picture language and he's saying, "But I'm assuming that you probably will wander off. So let me tell you a story about a shepherd." Anyone know a shepherd? Like a father in heaven, a shepherd. Well, when someone wanders off, what will the shepherd do? He will go and hunt for the one. That's a reassuring story. Right there, Jesus understands what we like, doesn't he? So he tells us the story about one who goes out. And he says, "I want you to do the same. I want you to be the one who's like a shepherd." And then he says, "If your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault just between the two of you." We'll get onto that in a second. And then Peter came to Jesus and said, "Lord, how many times should I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me?" Jesus, Peter is suddenly more concerned with not just sin in the general sense, but sin in the personal sense. Which is probably true of most of us, isn't it? I mean, if you sin in the general sense, I'm not too fussed, but if you sin against me, well, now I'm really fussed. You agree? Yeah, don't do that. You haven't seen him on that cross. But that's true, isn't it? That's where our minds go to. You can see the flow. You see the flow of Matthew 18. Peter takes it down to, "Well, what do I do when someone sins against me?" Jesus was maybe talking about general sin, or generally missing the mark. But what happens when a scandal comes against you? People say things against you. And Jesus' answer is always this. Look at their face. Look at the person next to you. Look at their face. You're very obedient. I know it was awkward for a moment. But isn't that the hardest way of communicating with someone? To their face? It's so much easier to send them a text or write them an email. I'm a recipient of emails, and people love to send vicar's emails, particularly when they're cross. Mm-hmm. Or irritated, or they want to make a point, so they send an email. But they rarely come up to your face. Or at least it's like age 20 or maybe 19, 10. You know, people don't come up to my face and say, "I have a concern, I feel really disappointed." But why do we do that? It's because we're frightened of looking people in the eye and saying, "Actually, this caused me pain, it's hurt me, this is troubling." But Jesus doesn't want us to be a group of people that don't look each other in the eye. He wants us to be a group of people that are brothers and sisters who look each other in the eye and go, "That actually hurt me. Can I talk to you about it?" Can we become real community rather than pseudo community together? Would you like to be a part of a church like that? Well, it's going to be costly because it's going to go through emptiness. Yeah. Because emptiness is really painful, really hard. But I, for one, want to do that with you, and I hope you will be able to do that with me. But if it really hurt, don't write it down. If it really hurt, don't write it down to them. Don't talk to them face to face. If you've written something down to someone and you still are worried about that thing, make a plan about how you might meet up with that person and talk to them face to face. Follow Jesus. See if you can do that with the thing that is most concerning you, the hurt that comes in your life. Have you done voting? Voting is the other way we deal with stuff. Moaning is when we go to someone else to talk about the thing that's just happened to us. Isn't it? You recommend? Moaning harms the other person. It damages their reputation, but there's nothing to solve the problem. Isn't that true? It makes us feel better about ourselves. They go down, we go up, which is really the competition game in the room. Because we kind of like measure ourselves alongside other people, and one of the ways we feel good about ourselves is not to rise up into people, to push other people down, just instantaneously go up just by default. But, you know, Rory, I don't know what Rory's doing at the moment, but he may not win because he gets really lots of putts in the hole, but he may win because everyone else goes down and misses the hole. And that's what we like to put people down so that we go up. And I would say that moaning is one of those very important things. And it makes the other person listening. So have you ever been in a situation where you're chatting to someone else and they start moaning about something else to you, and and you join them? I'm here, I'm right. Allison, rubbish, terrible. Why don't you counsel? Terrible. My mother-in-law, terrible. Make up a name. Your boss. I don't know. Not your boss. It makes the other person listening feel good about themselves too. Suddenly you become two brilliantly good, righteous people, and the rest of the world is rubbish. So he says, go and see them face to face. But if they will not listen, again, I think Jesus is being honest about this. Have you ever tried to resolve the prophets? Does it always work? No, it doesn't. And so Jesus says, well, if they won't listen, then take someone else along with you. Why would you do that? Well, because your word is sometimes a difficult time. And so Jesus said, well, take someone else along. He can come and be part of the conversation with you. Why would that be? So that if two can gang up against one? No, that wouldn't be Jesus' way of doing it. It would be so that there can be resolution to this issue. Because three of you can referee for each other. Is that right? Because that's the goal of restitution. And interesting, do you notice that where two or three are gathered, there I am in the mummy? I used to think that was about praying to people and no one came. That's the verse we trip out, isn't it? When we're in a prayer meeting and no one's there. Or two or three again. I'm there in the midst of you. Shall we pray? You know, it's got nothing to do with prayer, that verse. It's got to do with conflict resolution. Is that interesting? He's saying, where will I be? I'll be in those most difficult conversations where two or three are gathered. Because they're in my name, they're brothers and sisters, and they're trying to resolve the hardest bits of their lives with each other. And they're struggling through crisis and chaos and bitterness and anger and frustration. I'm going to be right there! Isn't that good? That's good, isn't it? Opens up that scripture all over to me again. It's fantastic. So the goal is restitution. Resolution rather than retribution. And the way is face to face. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the assembly or to the gathering. Now, I can't imagine ever needing to do that. Can you imagine needing to do that? Because you've already taken as many people along with you in order to make it better. But can you imagine what it would be like to the public community? Well, next week we're going to have an assembly, and I thought we might bring this issue up. Shall we resolve it together now, or shall we bring it up at the assembly? Which would you choose? I want to resolve it before he got to the assembly. Isn't that right? And that's what Jesus is doing. I don't think he's particularly saying, this is like what I'm planning for you to do on a regular basis, to shame and shame. But I think he's saying, maybe you could do this so that you all make an effort to resolve these things that are bound to come along. Truly, I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. This is another recipe for that. When we're casting out demons or stuff like that, when we're trying to kind of take territory off the enemy or stuff like that. Yeah, you're in. But it's nothing to do with that either. It's to do. Do you know the word to lose is the same word that we translated forgive them? Jesus then tells a story, which we have heard twice of us today, I'm not going to repeat it again, about someone who was loose from their death. They had a massive debt, millions of pounds, and the king loosed them fine. He could have bound them to the debt, but instead he chose to loose them. And Jesus says, whatever you lose on earth will be loosed in heaven. In other words, we have the capacity to create freedom and forgiveness through our loosening and forgiveness. Isn't that powerful? That God will respond to our forgiveness for other people, and He will also forgive them. What happened on the cross? Remember that? Father, forgive them. Giving permission for His Father in heaven to use. Peter came to Jesus and asked, how many times shall I forgive or lose my brother? How many times shall I let them off? And he says, again and again and again and again. And then he tells that story. Beautiful, beautiful story. The word he uses is forgiveness. Afiemi. Afiemi. He means to let go. To lose. Summary of Jesus' teaching. Being a church matters, gathering matters. Expect sins as things up, take sin seriously, and address it in love. Make sure that the goal is your restoration. Do everything face to face, talk to people rather than about people. Do everything in community. Learn to let things. Expect Jesus. Jesus is here tonight. Josh is going to lead us into more worship. And as he does, I feel like the Spirit is moving from us. Because I'm sure that because we're humans, there is a whole lot of stuff that we know is unresolved that we want to deal with. Is that right? So if any of you want to resolve some of your stuff tonight, again, what we'll do is we'll do a similar thing to last week. We'll just come forward and you can bring your stuff to Jesus. And you can just say, Jesus, this is my issue. And you can talk to him. But what the difference in standing there and standing here, it is not really that you become more holy as you come to the front, or the Spirit falls as you come to the front, but rather that your heart opens up and you release it in Jesus. And because it somehow declares to the others, it gives permission to everyone else who knows of their own as well, that they can accept their own failures. So do you want to come and join me at the front? Because I've got some stuff that I want to say to you. Where's Jesus? Where's Jesus tonight?